Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download Stand Well Back. Listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself, Simon and Martin Keown reflected on a mixed night in Europe for the British clubs, with Rangers fans celebrating and Brighton fans commiserating. Seagulls chief executive Paul Barber joined us to discuss the troubles their fans found themselves in and put the defeat against Roma into perspective. Plus, it's set to be Pep versus Klopp for the final time in the Premier League this Sunday. Who will come out on top in this clash of monumental importance? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. So one thing I know, I'm in the presence of two gentlemen who are at the moment talking at length with their publishers, writing books, because Simon, not only are you scribbling at the moment.
Indeed.
Mr. Martin Keown is talking to his backers and publishers.
Yes, Jim.
When do we see the fruits of your labour?
Well, I think it should be in the shops before next Christmas, but it's the work involved. You know, hats off to anyone who's had to do it. People think it's liberating. I think there's a pressure to tell the story as best you can, to do justice, really.
Yes.
Do you have to write words alongside the pictures that you colour in your book?
Oh, no. There will be some good pictures to complement the various stories. But it's quite a process.
Tell me about it, mate.
Being a bit of a perfectionist, as I am, then you want to give the best version you can. I've actually read 40 different autobiographies or memoirs in recent weeks to actually get to a head around how these things are done.
All right.
And I think Simon's got a decent book, actually. There's a lot of energy in his book.
Very kind, man.
It's one of those things where you have to feel, you want to make them feel as if like they can't put it down, you know?
Absolutely. Well, it's still propping up that short leg in my kitchen table.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to book number two from Mr. Jordan. Your column in the mail yesterday hit the spot, Simon. Enormous reaction to that.
Yeah. Good.
How do you feel after that? Because you and columns, you're not new to doing that in a variety of different newspapers, but you say what you mean and you mean what you say, don't you?
Well, I think that's what you should do, shouldn't you? I mean, ultimately, people shouldn't wander out of a room wondering what you meant.
Right.
I think they should be clear, and I think that my observations were fair. Those that want to make observations about the fact that it veered into questioning certain scenarios inside the Football Focus show haven't read the article.
Yeah.
There are people with agendas that are going, you mentioned a gay person, that makes you a homophobe. Don't be so bloody stupid. Read what I wrote.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with it at all.
Football Focus.
It's a programme that I really enjoy doing. And I'm glad I wasn't on it last week if he was criticising everybody on it. But I will defend that show.
Well, tragically, Football Focus is the bland leading the bland.
Well, let's hope next, the week after next, it won't be, because I'm going to be on there.
Well, we'll look forward to it.
Maybe we'll take it to new levels.
So. We'll look forward to it.
Well said, Martin.
Might have a Simon slot.
I doubt it.
Turn the whole thing around. As I mentioned in the introduction, last night over in Rome, with their fans contending with trouble off the field, the Brighton team came unstuck on it. That's very much the case at the wrong end of a 4-0 thumping, but there was all sorts of skullduggery going on last night in Rome, and the chief executive of Brighton, Paul Barber, will join us later on. You could almost put the house on it that there's going to be trouble when an English team goes to a place like Rome or Milan. We've seen it in Naples.
There is more than likely to be a story of trouble.
Well,
Simon,
let's call it for what it is.
Yeah.
You can almost put your house on it when an Italian side is involved in something because they seem to bring trouble with them. You know, it's got nothing to do with an English team. We just happen to be the victims of their behaviour. We've seen it with Napoli coming over when they played Leicester. So it's I'm not going to allow the narrative to be built up around, not you're doing that, by the way, that it's an English disease, that it's subsequently an English problem. The Italians at the centre of this, they're the consistent theme, so we're just pointing our finger in that direction.
Yeah.
Do they look at our reputation, though, sometimes?
I think that forms
part
of their thinking.
This generation suffer because of it.
I mean, a couple of fans stabbed in the Italian capital ahead of the match. But as well as that, a whole bunch of things were going on. Brighton reported objects being thrown at their fans by Roma supporters, including bottles, coins and lighters. Welcome to the Eternal City. How lovely was that? Paul Barber will join us pretty shortly. I said in the introduction as well, Martin, it was a great night, a mixed night in Europe for the British sides, because Liverpool got a great result. So too did Rangers, and it might have been even greater. And they managed to prevent the equaliser at 2-1 for Benfica. But a 2-2 draw in Lisbon, Benfica 2, Rangers 2, quite a scoreline. Funnily enough, in Glasgow last Sunday night, I was talking to Philippe Clement, Martin, and I said to him, can you get past Benfica? You can get past anyone, he said, if you prepare right.
No, not happy.
If you prepare right. So we'll talk about that in 1 second. It was a considerable result, and everybody in Europe stood up and thought, wow, are Rangers destined for another final? This was Clement post-match.
No, not happy. I think we were really close by writing history here. This team never lost an European Europa League game at home. And we were close on this evening. So you're not happy about that, but I'm proud about my team. That's another thing. They showed really team mentality. They showed the right things. We scored good goals. We get unlucky goals against, both of them. Otherwise, it would have been amazing. But now it's a really strong performance of my team. And they showed really character and also quality on the ball.
That is a standout result, to be honest, Martin, but it's only job half done, isn't it? Now they want to finish them off at Ibrox. But do you know what? Rangers are unbeaten in 9 home matches in the Europa League, beating plenty of big clubs at home. On the way to their final in 2022, Leipzig, Dortmund, Porto, Feyenoord, Benfica themselves, to name a few, have all failed to win at Ibrox in recent seasons. What a chance they've got, have they not?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that performance that season put them right back on the map, didn't it, in European terms. Last night, I thought the goalkeeper was absolutely magnificent last night. Butland is now looking like a new animal. He's like he's a second coming almost. I don't know, there's more confidence from him. He talks much better. He's feeling like he's a proper keeper now. And he was really stood up to them. And they went ahead twice in the game. They were under the cosh, though, Jim, somewhat. And Benfica have slipped a little bit. They lost to Porto 5-0 last weekend, which is a tip to the Arsenal game next week. Porto coming into town very much in good form. So who played tonight and get an extra 24 hours rest, just getting that in about Arsenal's, well, that's what they've got coming up. But no, really good. West Ham, late goal that they conceded. Zouma didn't come out of that one well. He switched off a little bit in the box. But they should have gone in front in that game. West Ham, lots of different chances in the game.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
But because, to want Brighton is a shock, though, Jim, to see them get battered in that way.
Yeah, I mean, they're a clinical lot, Roma, under De Rossi, who's really got them going post-Mourinho. This is a different outfit now because Mourinho complained that he didn't get what he wanted from the players. De Rossi's getting that and more.
Well, unarguably so. I mean, but I think we focus, for the purpose of this conversation, on Rangers' achievement.
Right.
Because Rangers have gone to, irrespective, if you get beat 5-0, there tends to be a bounce-back effect. And there wasn't, to some extent, because Rangers were in a situation where they could have won this game. And I think what he's doing, I'm a huge admirer of Clement's. I think it's great for the Scottish Premier League that they're competing in Europe in meaningful tournaments. And I think it's a great result to go over there and nearly come away with a victory. And be probably dissatisfied that you've got a draw against a team that's second in their table. Yes, they got their head handed to them the other day, but notwithstanding that, they're still a formidable side. So I think Rangers and the manner in which this manager has got them together is a really very, very... I mean, with all due respect to Michael Beale, I don't want to pour more vitriol on top of the stuff that he's already gotten, but it shows a difference between managers and people that want to be managers. It's night and day Clermont has got Rangers to be a formidable outfit. That if the, you know, and I might even see if I can find my way up to Ibrox at the beginning of April to watch that 12 o'clock game between Rangers and Celtic, because I think that will determine the outcome of the Scottish Premier League.
Oh, listen to you.
No, I'm just fascinated by it because I think it's really interesting to watch a manager come in,
no, I agree,
and take a dead duck in people's eyes and turn it into something that looks very different.
Yes.
And to play a team like Benfica, who are in part, you know, Eusebio connection, all that sort of stuff, a legendary and sort of iconic football team from Portugal, and Scottish teams that are constantly derided and ridiculed in it for their participation in Europe, with the exception of Rangers a few years ago against Eintracht Frankfurt and their league, I think it's a good endorsement. And I think, well, he's a proper manager, this guy.
100% engagement. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
It was a bad night for Brighton. In their first season in Europe, and they promised so much, of course, getting to the knockout stages. Brighton full of surprises and full of optimism on this European adventure, but they well and truly came unstuck last night in Rome, on and off the field. On the field, a 4-0 defeat for De Rossi, De Zerbi's men. De Rossi now in charge of Roma, of course. But off the field, problems. Two Brighton fans stabbed pre-match. Brighton also reported objects being thrown at their fans by Roma fans, including bottles, coins and lighters. In spite of all that, the Brighton chief executive, Paul Barber, has stepped out of a meeting down at the Amex and joins us live. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning to you. It paints a bit of a sorry picture of a sorry night, a night to forget, Paul. How do you look at it?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're really disappointed. We got a bad result on the pitch. It's been challenging off the pitch. But, you know, it's not really a night to forget because it's still a momentous time in our club's history. And we're delighted to be in the last 16 of the Europa League. And unfortunately, last night didn't go the way we hoped it would. We've still got 90 minutes of football at least left to play. We're certainly not giving up. We know it's a tall order to try and get this tie back around and to try and win it. But it's been a remarkable season for the club. And you know, we're very proud of what the players and the coaching staff have achieved. And I'm very proud of the way the fans conducted themselves last night, despite, you know, a lot of provocation at times. And it's disappointing when that happens. And obviously, we're sad for the two young fans that were stabbed. Thankfully, the injuries are not serious and they were able to attend the game. But you just don't expect that to happen when you go away to follow your team for the first time in Europe. And, you know, they're not naive. We've given a lot of warnings about dangers and the issues. And thankfully, everyone eventually got home safe last night and today. And that's the most important thing of all.
I mean, back here, Paul, we were concerned when we started to hear stories of objects being thrown at Brighton fans by Roma supporters, including bottles, coins and lighters. There's Neil saying, I knew this would happen. Roma fans have been at it for years. When Leeds played there in 2000, they were flying up and down outside the stadium on scooters, attacking Leeds fans. Nothing's changed. I mean, did you fear there were going to be incidents like this, Paul?
We certainly made our fans aware that there could be incidents like this. And again, the vast majority of the fans, nearly 70,000 of them in the stadium last night, were not behaving like that. You know, let's be clear about that. And equally, I was in the city the night before the game, out and about, and people were warm and welcoming and friendly. So the vast majority of people in Rome, you know, did not behave the way, sadly, some people did. But unfortunately, it has happened for years and years and years in football. And, you know, if I go all the way back to my England days, nearly 25, 26 years ago, you know, we were seeing, hearing about and witnessing incidents like this even then. All we can do, and we have done, is to report it to the local authorities and the police, to UEFA. We actually took the UEFA delegate last night to the corner of the pitch to witness things being thrown at our fans. Our security staff literally led the UEFA delegate down to exactly where it was happening, asked him to film and take notes, and we'll see what happens. Because this gets reported time and time again, and yet, time and time again, it continues to happen. I don't know what the consequences will be for Roma. You know, it's sad because their executive team, their chief executive, their board, very, very nice people, very concerned about what happened last night and disappointed in their own fans. Certainly small numbers of them. But this happens too often. And unfortunately, English fans are far too often on the receiving end of it. And yet the smallest discrepancy at one of our stadiums in England and UEFA come down on us like a ton of bricks. It's just disappointing that serious incidents don't seem to carry the same sort of weight.
I mean, Paul, I've already characterised it that way about the propensity for English fans to be treated in a certain way and the reaction when English fans are involved. And this is on Italian clubs. It's been a repeated set of circumstances within Italian clubs. But I also wanted to talk to you about the challenges it now presents for you for the return fixture, given the temperature and the outlook and the publicity. Does it make any difference to the way that you look at this game from an allocation point of view to Roma fans through to the policing obligations and through to the overall responsibility you have of managing your fan base, given the fact the temperature will be quite high in the return leg?
Well, first of all, Simon, I think it's really important that people don't overreact to what happened to two of our fans and a small number that were had objects thrown at them. We don't want reprisals. We don't want people going out to get some kind of revenge. Yeah. That's the first thing. The second thing, you know, I've got the confidence in our security staff and Sussex Police that they'll manage the stadium as they always do to create a safe environment. There's going to be around 1,500 or so Roma fans travelling. You know, we will know exactly who they are. They will only get into the stadium, you know, after their identities have been checked, and we'll do our best to do that and keep people as safe as possible. But we've got to rely on the vast majority of fans coming to watch a football match, and it could be a really good football match. You know, the way we play, you know, Roberto will not accept a 4-0 defeat lightly. He will want the team to go out and give their best and try and get back into the tie. That could make for a really fantastic game. And I think the vast majority of fans will want to be in the stadium for the whole 90 plus minutes to see that, because anything could happen, as it can in any football match. And I just hope that it's a great night of football and a peaceful night, and that people enjoy the occasion at the Amex as they do time and time again when they come here, home fans and visiting fans.
I think probably, as happens in the past, Paul, Roma will probably bring a sizable number of security personnel themselves, will they not?
Yes, I think they will, Jim. And again, our staff will liaise with their club to make sure it's a safe environment for them as well. You know, we don't want our club's name tarnished by, you know, a reprisal attack of some kind. That's not necessarily welcome or wanted. We just want the game of football to go ahead next Thursday safely and peacefully. And hopefully, as I say, it will be an exciting game for everybody in the stadium to witness.
Yeah. Paul, post-match, Roberto did speak, obviously, about what had just happened on the field of play. His boys suffering a 4-0 defeat in the first leg. As you say, it's not over yet. But he had an interesting message with what he said. Have a listen.
We know very well the situation. I know very well the situation. I spoke with the owner a lot of time before February on the transfer market, and I told him the problems we are finding. But it's the first time Brighton plays this competition. Europe League Final 8 is a big level for us. And so we have to improve, to progress.
So, Paul, you might not be surprised that he's saying, well, I've spoken to the owner about how we can add to the squad, how we can strengthen the squad. Do you think that was a time for Roberto to throw that in? Or do you think, well, almost inevitably he'll say something like that off the back of a 4-0 defeat?
Of course. And I think, you know, if Roberto's spoken to Tony once or twice about this, he's spoken to me about 100 times. So trust me, I know. And, you know, I think you have to put it into the context of where we are. You know, we're not going to use injuries as an excuse for last night, because, you know, we had a good team out and, you know, we didn't perform on the night as well as we could have done. But we are missing Pedro, Mitoma, March, Milner, Hinchelwood. And Saito is only just coming back from injury. These are key players. These are big players for us. You know, our top goal scorer, arguably our top assist maker, a young defender that's come all the way through and done a brilliant job this season, scored goals in Europe and the Premier League. And then James Milner, who everyone knows, would have added a huge amount of experience and guile to last night's performance. So these are not excuses, but they're facts. And of course, if those players have been available, then, you know, adding players in the transfer window, whether it was last summer or at Christmas, wouldn't have felt quite so necessary. But this is football. This is the way it is. You know, other clubs have had injuries and they're getting through them, and we have to do the same. You know, we haven't been out of the top nine in the Premier League all season, despite 9, 10, 11 injuries at times. Roberto's done a fantastic job. Players have done a remarkable job. The fans have been brilliant all the way through, because our form has been a little bit indifferent recently. But that's part and parcel of playing in four competitions for the first time and in Europe for the first time. We're still learning. We've got so much more to learn about playing football at this level. And, you know, sometimes part of that learning is taking a beating as we took last night and building resilience from it and then moving forward as a club together for what comes. And that's Nottingham Forest on Sunday and a big game in the Premier League. And then 4 days later, Roma come back here. And we've got a mountain to climb.
Paul, as you might expect, I take a slightly dim view of a manager using an opportunity to leverage an owner into the press about transfer fees, but I won't expect you to observe on that because of the diplomacy you might need to deploy. But the expectations of Brighton now, do you feel that you're at this position with the evolution of the club where the expectations are now at a stage where there is almost a priced in perspective that there's a distinct possibility that Brighton can go to Rome and get results, that Brighton are going to be at the top end of the Premier League? Does that weight upon you and Tony and change the direction of your thinking, given the narrative that's now being written, which is Brighton is a top side that produces top players that other people pay top money for and keep on doing, and they've got a top manager that other people covet?
It adds to the pressure, Simon, definitely, because of the weight of expectation. But I think that's what we've been doing this for, certainly in my case and Tony's case, for the last 12 years here. You know, we've wanted to bring on this level of expectation and pressure. It's what we have been aiming for. It's what we've been working towards. And now it's about learning to live with it. It's about learning to deal with it. And, you know, progress in any sport, let alone Premier League football or top-level football, in my experience, is never a straight line. There's always bumps in the road. And those bumps in the road test you. They require you to be resilient. And, you know, sometimes you have to take a big bump and see how you react to it. And this is one of our bigger bumps. It's disappointing and really disappointing. You know, we all came home on the plane in the early hours of this morning feeling pretty flat, pretty disappointed with what had happened. But at the same time, when you put it in perspective, 25 years ago, we were at the bottom of the pyramid. We were almost going out of the league. We had no stadium. We didn't have a training ground. We didn't have owners that at that point, you know, had the kind of resources that Tony's got to put us in the position we're in today. We're in a pretty good place right now. It's a great time to be a Brighton fan, and it's a great time to be an employee of the club. And we've just simply got to get over last night quickly, move forward on Sunday and keep going, because that's what this club, you know, has done now for more than a dozen years. And we're enjoying the ride, and it's a journey, and there's going to be those bumps in the road.
Paul, it's just it's admirable, dare I say, as a former player, hearing someone from the club so prominent coming out protecting. I'll always be eternally grateful for Brighton. Was there in 85, made my league debut back under the Chris Catlin regime all those years ago. But and this is a voice of wisdom coming from you, sort of putting things into perspective. But we kind of like seen great things from Brighton and lots of acquisitions, players gone. The players that you had out on that pitch, when it all comes down to it last night, you start to look at it as a neutral and think they should be doing more. They should be doing way more. You had a lot of players back. Even the substitutes are now, everything's just coming. That was a real shock across Europe, because we know here in the Premier League what a wonderful team Brighton is. And I'm not seeing a lot of results. If we go right back, I think it's 4 wins in 14 games. And I just feel there's I'm not sure where the inconsistency is, whether it's the workload or whether there's a loss of form. But right now, you need a massive result at the weekend. I think so, to turn it round. Everyone clamouring for your manager and your players. There's a lot of players here that other clubs would really want to buy. So I'm kind of troubled as to why is that not working right at the moment.
That's a nice question, Paul, for it you, right at the end, isn't it?
And I thought we were mates going back to the
Well, I was about to thank you for coming on, Paul, but Kieran comes in with
the stuff. No, this is the reality. I mean,
no, it's a fair question. I mean, first of all, I'd say, you know, it's very easy for me to come on here, or any of us in this job to come on here when things are going well. You know, it's important, though, to come on when, you know, we've had a bad run. We've had 3 defeats in a week. That's a bad run by anyone's standards. And overall, over the last couple of months, despite the injuries, you know, we haven't got as many wins as we would like. But there's a couple of factors here. First of all, I think there is the workload, and, you know, there has been a significant number of games in a relatively short period, but clubs at the top level have to deal with that. Secondly, the injuries have compounded that, because Roberto hasn't been able to rotate as quickly or as readily as he usually might with a full squad, which makes that workload even harder. And then in one or two cases, you've got players coming back from injury. Julio Enciso is a great example, who's a fantastic player, but he's young. he's come back from a big injury and he's not yet played a full 90 minutes of football as part of that recovery. And yet we're relying on him last night to...
Great
to
really, talent, by the way.
Yes, yes.
And a fantastic talent.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
It's a combination of things. And, you know, yeah, maybe one or two players are not in the best form that they've been in, you know, all season. But yeah. I think, you know, if you take out Pedro with 20-plus goals and Mitoma with his goals and assists, Solly March was a big loss from way back at the start of the season, who is another goal scorer and provider. It's just a factor that we have to live with because we haven't played in four competitions of this type ever. And it's tough. And the Thursday-Sunday routine and the travel, getting back at 2:30 this morning, is also tough. But yeah, they're not excuses. They're not excuses. They're just facts. And it's part of our learning process.
Well, well done for answering our call and coming on off the back of a night like that. Next Thursday night, Paul, 8:00 kickoff. Beat them 5. Beat them 6. It would be brilliant. Brilliant.
That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be great. But no, listen, thanks for having me on. And, you know, we're sorry, you know, for the fans that travelled last night because it wasn't what they hoped for or expected. But the reception they gave the players at the end, despite that, was fantastic. And I'm very grateful to them. So thank you to them.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
The actual focus of attention, Simon, fair and square, seems to be on Saudi Arabia at the moment because speaking at the Bloomberg Power Players event in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, the Newcastle United co-owner Amanda Staveley was on her feet and was speaking about a variety of things, not least about Steve Bruce. And it begs the question, did Steve Bruce only have himself to blame for not being kept on as part of the Newcastle project, or has he become an easy target for the new regime? Staveley spoke about Bruce out in Jeddah.
When you go in, it's you have all the hype of trying to acquire the club, and it took us 4 years to do that. We know that we're patient and we know we were persistent, but there needed to be dramatic change because the club had been run, you know, in a very different format, and we had very few commercial revenues. We had a team that was aged, a coach that didn't even want to come to work. We had a fan base that was very angry, and we had to take this, you know, incredible club and inject it with some life.
I mean, I'm presuming she includes Bruce in that statement, didn't even want to work.
She must be talking about Steve, mustn't she?
Before he left the club. A very angry fan base. That's do you true, recall it to be like that? Because you no doubt were in touch with Ashley around those times.
Obviously, it was an angry football club in terms of the relationship with their owner. And that, what Amanda says is true. They were disenfranchised, not with a club, but with the ownership model. We knew it. We saw it. It was clear. It was evident. They hated Ashley and everything he represented. And they felt that he used Newcastle to promote Sports Direct. So I'm surprised that they don't think there's any commercial revenue streams there. And by the way, they nicked the football club of 300 million quid. So they should be perhaps quite grateful that there wasn't that many revenue streams. And I think it's also important to suggest that some of the players that they talk about as an ageing squad are still resident in Newcastle's playing squad now. Joe Linton, Al Mirren, Lascelles, and we probably can go on. Look, I spoke to Steve. I find myself in a territory of not wanting to be polarised into a situation where I'm defending Steve Bruce against observations because people will say it's bias. But I'm also privy to the conversations that were had at the time to some extent. I'm also privy and recall the conversations that Amanda Stavely had with Steve Bruce while she was talking to the media about Steve and how much she valued Steve and what they wanted Steve to do and so on and so forth. Steve Bruce knew that he was surplus to requirements, knew that they didn't want him there. And my recall of what Steve Bruce said to me at the time and the conversations that he said subsequently was that he made himself available for whatever they wanted him to do, knowing full well that they didn't want him. And so for her to say something, and of course it will play into the narrative, and of course people that don't like Steve Bruce and think he did a crap job at Newcastle and think he did a crap job at Aston Villa will alight upon it.
Yeah,
I have a different view. I think he could have done much better at West Bromwich Albion. I think he let himself down there. But notwithstanding that, you look at the job at Newcastle and you say, okay, wasn't great football at times, but a very different set of circumstances. Eddie Howe's done a brilliant job. But he's also had a completely different atmosphere from the ownership model and a different atmosphere from the fans because they got rid of Ding Dong, the witch is dead, Ashley's gone. In comes anybody but Ashley. And you've also got a decent amount of expense to back Eddie for Eddie to do a brilliant job. I think that's a rather crass and unnecessary set of observations from Amanda for some reason wanting to promote herself in the conversation rather than just bask in the glory that they've got most things right. They have got most things right at Newcastle in the last 2 years.
What we do know is that back in 2023, UEFA President Alexander Seferin said only European clubs can participate in the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League. Only European federations can apply to host a final. He says we would have to change all of our rules and we don't want to do that. So you can forget Saudi clubs playing in European competition. Sure, but Amanda seemed to fly against that over in Jeddah.
I think that would be a fantastic opportunity to take a stake in a Saudi club. I love the league and I've seen it develop and it's really exciting to see the competition really growing over here as well. And
do you think it's going to be a Saudi club in the Champions League? Because it's something that we've spoken about.
I'm quite sure there will be a Saudi club in the Champions League.
How long before do you think?
Long. Well, I don't know how long, but I don't think, knowing Saudi, I don't think it'll take too long.
Well, the next question had to be, well, explain to us how that gets created, given that the Champions League is a European competition. So explain to us, Amanda, how you envisage that happening.
Money.
I understand how the money side of things manifests itself, but then you're changing the dynamics. It's no longer a UEFA competition. It's no longer a European competition. It's something completely different. So you're changing the entire landscape. Of course, money. Of course, money comes in to clarify the issue. I was interesting to see that Amanda wasn't over keen to criticise Mike Ashley. That might have something to do with the fact that some of the money that she had to buy the football club might have come from him. Who knows? The point is this. Well, you understand certain things, don't you, in terms of her ownership and her percentage of the ownership. Where did that money come from? Yeah, we can debate that in a different conversation. The point is that do we see Saudi as a force and a moving concern? I think that Saudi have every right to develop their league. I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think they should be able to develop their league. I don't want it at the expense of our league. I don't want them to poison the well by being so ridiculously profligate with their money that it creates a hyperinflation in football for everybody else. And I don't believe that they can do it because I don't think you can supersede legacy football clubs. I think the thing about football is players move around. It's wonderful when you've got Ronaldo. Drop Ronaldo in, he's stardust. But there's only one Ronaldo. There's only one Neymar. There's only one Messi. But football clubs have far greater depth and reach. In order for Saudi football clubs to dominate football and to start being at the legacy table, there's got to be lots of reasons there. And turkeys don't vote for Christmas. Seferin, I think, enjoys his relationship with Saudi. I like the way, you know, he had the bravery to suggest the other day that actually UEFA got it right against the Middle Eastern Football Club and then rode back against the idea about 2 weeks later that he was in any way responsible for a committee that could have put an appeal in for UEFA against Manchester City getting their penance overturned. Jim, interesting times, Jim.
Yeah.
If we could move back to the Newcastle debate about Steve Bruce and we look at that, I think actually Amanda Stavely would be best advised. I think it's a lack of class, really. I'm not really sure why she's talking and bringing previous people in. Look, it's a new regime. Let's move forward. I would be disappointed if I was part of Newcastle. Let's not trouble ourselves with what happened before. Let's look ahead. There's no need to blame other people. I'm sure Steve Bruce will defend himself, and Simon, if he doesn't, Simon will anyway. But nonetheless, I think...
I'll just add some balance.
I think actually it just needs a bit more class from Amanda. You know, she can overreact. I enjoy listening the emotion. Remember the League Cup final last year? She was telling us she was going to win everything, the Champions League. You know, everything was before
well,
them.
She told me that, and of course, that was in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Exactly that. And I think this is a little bit because it's a bit of a bump this year. Yeah. They've got the FA Cup to look forward to. They won again last weekend, but they've had a few indifferent results. It's been really difficult for them with injuries and their squad, and Tonali was suspended unexpectedly. So yeah, it's been difficult, and they haven't been able to spend the money, Jim, that they really wanted to. But nonetheless, you're representing the club, representing the right way, and I think she's let them down a little bit there, Newcastle.
Yeah,
and it's right as well, because you wouldn't hear Paul Barber speak like that.
No. Well, I mean, what is intriguing and somewhat confusing, Simon, is that Amanda says that it won't be long until Saudi Arabia have a team in the Champions League. But when we spoke to Michael Emanalo, who's in charge of the Saudi Pro League, this was back in September 2023. This is what he said.
No. I think I don't know where that's coming from. I think that's somebody just taking a very dreamy leap into a far-fetched future. I think our goal is to take quality baby steps. And the first step is to stabilize our league, you know, make it very entertaining for our fans. And in so doing, and dear fans around the world, pay attention to what we're doing. That's not been something that I've been privy to, even as a part of a discussion or a plan.
So even Emanalo was saying, forget the Saudis being in the Champions League. That's not the focus of our attention. Even in the longer term, we want to make the Saudi Pro League very successful first.
Well, that's probably because he's an experienced football operator rather than an excitable little Duracell bunny that's running around parroting certain strap lines. The bottom line is that if you want to investigate that, then drill in behind Amanda, in metaphorically speaking. Okay, Amanda, how does that work? Because we can all turn around and say, in some long lost far flung time, that we will be in the Champions League, because that's open ended. You know, okay, how does that look? How do you create it? How do two different continents collide in a European tournament? How are you suggesting? Are you suggesting that the Saudis buy their way into this competition? It's going to be ultimately because they can write big checks. Is that what you're suggesting, Mando? Are you advocating for that? Then you start making people stand up these silly observations. Look, it's not beyond the wit of man to see things change. We've seen a Champions League become everything but a Champions League. Mm. So we're not beyond the wit of man to say, well, the Champions League, the European Cup, was champions, and now we've got everybody else in the competition as well. So it's not comprehension. But I do think Martin's analysis, not because I've got any agenda against Amanda, I think she's a very capable operator, and she proved me wrong in the longer game that Newcastle would be acquired. More to do with piracy being
she
admitted.
She did.
More to do with piracy being admitted, but notwithstanding it, still she was right. But I do think there's a lack of class in that observation. I think it's unnecessary. I think somebody being given an opportunity to say something and getting carried away saying it.
100% engagement. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Welcome to the Heartbreak Hotel. Check your problems in, drop your feelings off, and enjoy your stay.
What an epic battle we have unfolding for the right to be called the Premier League champions.
They find Salah instead, it's 1-0 on the counter-attack.
But Liverpool are determined to finish the season in style.
It's Darwin Nunez who has scored in the 9th minute of stoppage time.
Haaland on the money scores!
And the treble is still on, the double treble.
The biggest game in England now is Liverpool versus City.
Wait. They rarely win at Anfield.
Nope. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 0.
But now comes the biggest test.
What we learned over the years is that if you want to be around City, you better win all your football games because they do.
Because they're the best two teams I have ever seen in my career.
This is where the heavyweights emerge. They might be behind on the scorecard, but Manchester City can still become the undisputed champion. And how the boys from the Kop would love to floor Pep for Klopp.
What is about to unfold is Liverpool against Manchester City. They're both about to play their 28th game in this Premier League campaign. Liverpool have the edge on 63 points. Manchester City 1 point behind on 62. Martin Keown is alongside Simon and myself. Martin, when it comes down to it, this game on Sunday, City have Pep. Liverpool have Jurgen Klopp. Do you know, are we only going to miss these two when they've actually departed the scene? Is that when it'll hit us that Klopp really did go at the end of that season and Pep did go whenever Pep goes? Are we going to look at each other and think, what on earth did we have? Did we realise what we had?
We've been saying for some time now, we look at the Premier League and we've got the best teams, we've got the best managers. And I think these two will go down as all-time greats. There's no doubt about that. And what I think they've helped each other actually to remain competitive and to be winners, to stay top dog. I just wanted to look at a few statistics here. So Liverpool, I think it's one defeat from Liverpool the last 20 games against City at home. So if you're anybody looking at the game tomorrow, that looks very strong in Liverpool's favour.
Yeah.
Somehow, though, I think City will win the game. And I think they'll win it because they'll see
City will go to Anfield
because
they
see their next two Premier League games as their chance to be champions once more. Because the next one is Arsenal, and they'll see it in this way as champions do. Okay, let's go to Anfield. Let's beat Liverpool in their own back garden. Now it's mouthwatering, and you look at it and you say, well, okay, how are they going to do it? And you look at the tactics, and I look at tactics a lot, and I see what they do in their midfield now with Stones going alongside Rodri allows then their two tens, I suppose, De Bruyne and Silva, the passing assassins, to really go to work. And what Liverpool then have to do is, because what it's all about for Pep is a game within a game. So he wants to control the middle of the pitch. And he'll have four players in the middle of the pitch. And Liverpool have got to ask themselves, are they going to put young Conor Bradley into midfield? Is he going to go in there? I think that Szoboszlai will come in for his legs because he's going to be needed. He hasn't played. He's had two substitutions from the bench in like recent games, which is nice. Salah's coming back, so the top line, what they'll do, City, though, when they do this, it's the turnovers, the transitions. So what they need to be aware of, they'll be playing three at the back and they'll be backing themselves against what is they are, at the moment, Liverpool, their front three are just in fantastic form right now. But they'll leave Akanji, they'll leave Walker, the speed merchant, they'll probably leave Diaz. That'll be the three, perhaps, when Stone wanders into midfield. But they will. Both their philosophies is great to watch. They play with a freedom, these two managers. They go after you. It's all effective football. So that's what I was saying. Strap yourself in for a fast ride.
Yeah.
But I think as champions, you go there as champions, I think City think they can do it.
Simon, it appears there's nothing much that Klopp doesn't know about Pep and vice versa. Klopp and Guardiola faced each other more than they faced any other manager across their careers, a total of 29 times. Klopp's 11 wins, the most by any manager against Pep. Pep's 10 is the most by any manager against the German. Mm-hmm. And Guardiola recognises that, in club football, the German is his biggest adversary.
Well, I think we are all friends. We know each other quite well. Of course, the time goes forward. So I've been Jurgen 8 years and 9 years in Liverpool, and of course it's not the same players than since the start. And rebuilt a little bit the team. The idea is quite similar. Of course, now Alexander-Arnold can play more inside sometimes outside. But the idea is quite similar, and always have been our best rivals, and sometimes when the season didn't work well, it was many injuries they had. Top club, top team, and looking forward for it.
So, I mean, Simon, when you look at it, Klopp Pep, is this a modern-day Fergie Wenger?
I suppose you could draw that parallel because of the personalities and the influence that they've had over English football from different reasons. Wenger changing Arsenal from what they were to what they became and changing football in lots of different ways with the thinking and the cerebral way he approached it and metamorphosising Arsenal into an appealing proposition rather than boring Arsenal, which was the regular chant that was cried out when George was running it and previous managers, which I think is unfair, but notwithstanding I think it was unfair, but that's what they got. Well, in this instance, with Klopp, you've got a new generation of football manager now. This football has really changed in the last 10, 12 years, even beyond the Ferguson time, where it's really become personality-driven to some extent and Disneyfication. So these characters, these very large characters, and specifically Klopp, really resonate with people. And that's why I think it's such a sad thing to lose him. I mean, things don't last forever. And I think Klopp will be really missed in the Premier League. I think it's a sad situation that we're losing that sort of personality, that sort of charisma, and that sort of impact, because there are not many of them. And that will be followed, I suspect, in reasonable short time by Guardiola. I don't think he'll hang around that much longer. I think if he does another treble this year, which is perfectly capable, he's the sort of manager that goes out when people want more, not less. Not that I can ever imagine there's going to be a period of time when they want less from Guardiola. But I do think it's a remarkable... I don't think it's the same rivalry as there was between Wenger
and Ferguson.
There's
more respect. I thought Sir Alex Ferguson, when Arsenal stopped being as really competitive as they were, I think it was easier to like Arsene Wenger. And I think that's why they came together more. More because Arsenal weren't winning the trophies. When he first came, Manchester United were running English football. In 92, yep. They came in. When Arsenal won it in 97, 98, that was they had won every other Premier League. And they were dominant. They were controlling English football. Yeah. And so Sir Alex wasn't fantastic with his respect towards Arsene Wenger. Who's this clever Frenchman coming in? So let's not forget, because we don't forget Arsenal.
It was a personality clash, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, but in time, and I think it was a great look that they became big, firm friends. And that's why I think Klopp and Pep really have done it better. I think they've shown that respect.
Stylistically, societally, we're slightly different. There is this propensity to, certainly in certain spaces, to operate without necessarily the same level of offence. Mourinho now falls foul of that. You know, when he turns around and says classic things like Wenger is a specialist in failure, those sort of things don't get trotted out by football managers too much anymore.
Thank goodness.
Oh, I don't know.
What did get trotted out was, it came from Trent Alexander-Arnold the other day. He's saying, looking back on this era, our trophies at Liverpool will mean more to us and our fan base because of the situations at both clubs financially. Erling Haaland picked up in that.
If he wants to say that, okay. I've been here 1 year and I won the treble and it was quite a nice feeling. I don't think he knows exactly this feeling. So that's what I felt last season. It was quite nice. So yeah.
I liked that, Martin. Did you not? Won the treble. I don't think Trent has had that feeling, that emotion.
No, but obviously there's been a lot of wealth. You know, there's always that natural symmetry, a correlation between who pays the most money and who wins the most trophies. So that you can't say that City wouldn't have been successful without the money that's been injected into that football club. But nonetheless, they've still had to buy the right players. We've seen Everton, haven't we? You know, everything caught fire and went in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So you have to buy the right players. Haaland is certainly one of those. But Liverpool, you have to admire as well. And they've spent a lot of money of their own. You know, the goalkeeper, Alisson. Mm-hmm. I know maybe that was they kind of, Coutinho went and they kind of like funded that, a lot of it themselves, but they still spent an awful lot of money, very wisely, I have to say. And the core of that group, his first signings, are pretty well still doing it for him.
Does whoever win on Sunday win the Premier League?
I think a win is big. I think it's really big. I think, of course, Arsenal will probably look for a draw and then have to do their own job against Brentford. But I see it differently. I think that I'm saying, and I mean, statistically, I was talking about, and I said, give this stat to Simon. So the last 30 games between these two teams, there's only been two wins by the away team. 30 matches, the away team, only two wins. That tells you that it can't happen. But City always seem to keep doing something that
you
we think they
City
can't do.
You think City will beat them?
I think that it's theirs to win it. And I think the way they've had an extra 24 hours, and Liverpool have had, let's not forget, Jim, they've got an awful lot of injuries there at Liverpool. Goalkeeper not in position. I think, you know, they've done remarkably well. But when it comes to this, is City now we're talking about.
Yeah, but Anfield, this goalkeeper is excelling though. Yeah. So whilst you haven't got Alisson in goal, you've got another goalkeeper.
He is, but he hasn't really. Very good. But when he's got the ball at the weekend, he'll be pressed like no other team would have ever pressed him so far in that first team. City be right in his boots. It won't be as easy as it's been against Forest last week. Watch that game back. No one pressed him. No one went near him. So let's see. And if they can do this, if Liverpool do it, if they beat City, they'll think they can do it, Jim. And it will give them, probably energise them, and give them the inspiration to think they can go on and do it.
I've got a feeling. I don't think Liverpool lose.
No, I don't think they do either. My gut feel is not to sit on a fence and occupy the territory that he forever inhabited once upon a time.
Am I sitting on the fence here?
No. That's my point.
Statistically, I should be.
That's my point. I'm saying that the territory that you used to inhabit, and we've obviously taken you over to the dark side now.
We've been here 5 years together.
Three. And I felt every day.
It felt like five.
But the point is that I think there will be a draw in this game, and I think it will open a door to Arsenal. And then it's be interesting to see what lessons Arsenal have learnt from last season, because then they'll be in front.
City play them next, don't they, after the FA Cup?
Indeed, they do.
Your 100% essential download. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back on Monday to bring you the best of the show.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.